what your impression was of Annie Ure, the curator before you. You must have had a first impression or a lasting impression of her.
Of course, she was already nearly 70. When I arrived, she must have been... No, she wasn't nearly 70. She was in her 60s. But she wasn't all that much in evidence until a few years after I got there. She was an old and an elderly and learned lady.
Yeah. Rather like John Fossey described her, as an elderly, kindly aunt, I think he said. Yeah.
And very pleasant, and always, you know, keen to talk about things in the museum.
Yeah.
And in those days, when a speaker came to the Classical Association, this was a big event in the department, and they stayed overnight. There was sherry beforehand, and they had dinner in the senior common room, and spouses were invited, and Annie was always invited.
Yes.
She didn't always come, but she was invited. And I met her, you know, a few times then. Initially, but I mean latterly she got too frail.
Yeah, yeah.
And she would lunch over in the senior common room from time to time.
Yes.
When she was in, yeah.
So you've got very happy memories of her, really.
Well, she was a very nice person, yeah,
yes.
Yes,
yes.
I never had the opportunity to visit the house, but I saw her a few times in here, and I remember once when Kitty Atkinson, now dead, she was a professor somewhere or other, wrote a book on Sparta. She was visiting. She was a friend of Annie's, and I lunched with them in the senior common room. And there was, I think, Professor Smallwood, who published various volumes of Roman texts relating to the early empire. She was a professor in Belfast. I think she knew Annie at some point. I'm not sure what the connection was there.
So, I'm sure that you're pleased that you did have a connection with the museum. You weren't probably expecting to become a curator of an archaeological museum when you...
Well, apart from Annie, I've been curator longer than anybody else to date.
Yes.
And I must have been the least expert.
Yes. Yes, so it's enriched your life, hasn't it, really? To have,
oh, yes.
Yes,
I learned a heck of a lot about lots of things doing the museum.
Yes, and the history of the countries and the parts they've come from, really, the items.
One interesting thing was when the Museums Committee for the area, the Museums Committee got going, National Museums Committee, and the one for the area, while I was curator, they had regular meetings in different places around this area. And so I saw things, you know, the odd military museum, saw the museum, the one down in, is it Bournemouth or Eastbourne? Russell Coates, places like that. And various meetings in London, museum meetings. I learned, you know, got into a lot of things then. And also got, Amy gets these now, invitations to the odd private view at the British Museum.
Yes, yes.
Which was jolly interesting.
Yes. Open some doors then.
Well, it was through that, I think, that, partly through that, and partly because I'm a Roman historian, that Sue Walker, who's now head of the Ashmolean Antiquities side, she got to know me, and it was she who recommended that they ask me to do the Roman myths. One for their series on myths and legends, which has now been translated into 9 languages and is being translated into 2 more. It's just a little baby book, for children, but it's for non-specialists.
Yes,
but there wasn't anything much else around at the time, so I think that's why it sold so much.
I'm sure it wasn't true.
But it was illustrated from any illustrations that came from the museum's own collections. The British Museum's collections were provided free because it was their publication. Anything else, I had a budget of, I think it was £200 to spend on photographs. So I made a point when I was on holiday in Amsterdam. I went to New Carlsberg and I bought their little books and found some stuff there. And I went to when I was in Cologne, I spotted a gemstone which had the radiate head of Augustus in the middle.
Really?
So I got a photograph of that. I had to pay for these, of course. But also, I knew that certain artists had illustrated certain things. So the French equivalent of the Bridgman Art Library, except it's a university's thing, I've forgotten its title, I got from them to provide two paintings by David of Greek and Roman themes. No, Roman themes, rather. And I knew that Claude Lorrain had done a series on the Aeneid. And we had the catalogue Raisonné in our library. And I discovered that some of the things there were at the British Museum. So I got illustrations from the British Museum. And I also knew that Maiolica, not Majolica, but Maiolica, Italian Maiolica, very often had classical scenes. And through Sue Walker I learned that there was a person in medieval and later antiquities in the British Museum. That was all being rearranged at the time, but she told me about a big exhibition there had been involving stuff from Oxford and BM and elsewhere with various things in it, and I discovered we had the catalogue of that in our library, and again there were a couple which were British Museum pots, their plates, so I didn't have to pay for those.
So
it was great fun. And also various coins. Well, we had the various books in here illustrating the coins or telling you the subject of the British Museum coins. So it was great fun researching this stuff.
Yes.
And I doubt if I'd had the know-how even to begin doing that if I hadn't been curator.
Great fun keeping within your budget.
But it brought the British Museum much more to my awareness, the antiquities there.
Yes.
And the Ashmolean, which of course was lesser on display.
Yeah.
But it was through the Ashmolean, actually, I discovered what those Cypriot figurines holding offerings were.
Oh.
Well, because they had very similar ones from tombs at Larnaca on display. Veronica Tatton Brown in the British Museum, I mean, they weren't for that book. She showed me what they had in their stores, but they didn't have anything similar. But then I found they had them on display in the Ashmolean, so I knew that.
Yeah.
That's how I knew what ours were.
Yes.
They were a part of the stuff that came from that relative of the Palmers.
Oh, yes.
They must have sent over, brought home crates of stuff from Cyprus.
Yeah.
You could in those days.
Well, Cyprus has got a lot more antiquities than people think, hasn't it? It's got a very rich history.
Yeah. One thing that I learned from what Percy Ewer had done, and which wasn't at all fashionable in those days, it used to be, of course, the images on the pots, objets d'art, and people funding archaeologists to get a share of the dibs.
Yes.
You know, like Carnarvon. In Egypt.
Yes.
And from just the odd cuttings that Annie had kept about Percy's original publications, so there were some people looked a bit askance about this paying attention to the lesser fabrics and even to fragments. Mm. Well, now, of course, this is the important thing. It's not the pretty pictures. I mean, David Gold will confirm this. It's the fabric, where they come from, and the fragments can tell you such a lot. Mm. And Percy, I found, among the stuff, there were about 50 fragments, and you know, it was bought from children or picked up at Mycenae. Mm. And he did this sort of thing whenever he was visiting classical places. And he brought home lots of unconsidered fragments found in the bushes at Ritzerna. Mm. Because they were evidence for styles of decoration.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I said that the launch event for the museum remodeling, that I inventoried, I mean, for the classified inventory, Annie had done one by rough date of entry, I when I was doing the Mycenaean ones, I did descriptions and my attempt at a drawing of every one of those blooming fragments.
Did you? Yeah. Well, of course, with forensic archaeology too, the actual content of the fragment could be analysed, and it could be tied either to a bush at Rizzona or maybe somewhere else.
Of course, you get people asking, well, is there any, are there any grains of pollen or anything else? There was at one time a little pillbox or something in the cupboards. There was a written label on it saying charred grain from. I don't know what happened to that.
I was handling an arabaloi in the
Arabalos.
Arabalos, yes, sorry. In the British Museum.
Yeah.
And I was showing somebody this. It was a tiny little pot like that was there. And they were moving it about and everything. And I tipped it upside down, and a grain fell out. Obviously, the handling had dislodged this.
Yeah.
And I thought, gosh, look at that. And I said to the woman, you know, I better put that back in there. And I passed the message on, hopefully to get back to the curator. They weren't interested.
Mm. Maybe they already knew.
They didn't. Mm. They just termed it as detritus, but I saw on the television the other day that they actually have tried growing some of this old just to see what they were eating.
So the emphasis is all quite different now.
Yeah.
And of course, that's part of the reason why archaeology has become much more scientific. Mm. Not just art history, it's they're using all sorts of scientific techniques for analysing the nature of the soil, what was grown, the diets. They're paying a lot more attention to bones.
Yes.
Than they ever used to.
And the contents of the stomach.
Well, if you've got that kind of state of preservation, you normally don't.
But sometimes from the teeth you can. Quite a lot of information how ground down they were.
Or, yeah. Well, they'd be pretty ground down if it was stone ground wholemeal bread.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. They'd be eating grit, wouldn't they?
I had to stop eating muesli because we were wearing my teeth down too much.
Well, yes, me too. It's the easiest way to break a tooth, isn't it? Or make your own, I think, is the best thing. Well, you must have one favourite piece in here.
It's impossible to have one favourite. Is that like asking, what's your favourite book?
Well,
there's quite a number of things that I'm attracted to for various reasons. Although it's an extremely unprepossessing object... It's dark grey, lump, and it rattles when you... It's a baby's rattle.
Oh.
I mean, Annie, found in Boeotia.
Where is it from? It's
found in Boeotia.
Yes.
I don't know what the little thing is inside and how they got it in and how it stayed in, but obviously it's pottery. I couldn't see a hole or anything.
No.
But I remember Annie's note on that saying that the colour was probably because it had... Might have been in incineration, but either the incineration burial or I suppose if it had been badly fired, but it wasn't a shiny black glaze; it was just dark grey. Mm. It's around the museum somewhere, and there's a very weird little thing that not a removable lid, but it's got a spout and a few tiny little holes in the lid. And she said this was some sort of strainer for baby food. Well, maybe if you pushed the stuff, the solid stuff would stay on top and the liquid would come down and the baby could... It's a very similar shape to the old baby's feeding bottles, the metal or pottery ones. Mm. No, the metal or pottery ones from long before that.
Oh.
So I assume it must have got just a very little bit of liquid through, and then I don't know what they'd do with the pulp, throw it away maybe, and the baby would be able to sip. Mm. It's around somewhere, it's black glaze. But there are all sorts of ones that I'm rather fond of for other reasons.
Mm.
You know, I quite like those Pagenstecher Lekythoids, they're rather cute.
Mm.
And I was always intrigued by something Percy wrote about, the Cothons, well, that's what he called them. They're those things that look like the kind of plate you can't tip over. And it's uncertain whether they were used for lamps or what they were used for. I mean, one theory was that they were used for lamps, because we've got one that has three pierced handles set around the outside. He wrote an article about them, and I think they have been written about in various other places. The point about them is that the rim incurves. So if it was tipped, the liquid would flow into the rim.
Yes.
And they say these three pierced handles do make it look as if it was meant to be hung up, possibly with some liquid in it, but nobody really knows.
Maybe it's a storm lantern.
Well, hardly, because there's no glass around. You're daft.
No, I mean, with the wick in, with the oil.
No, an indoor thing. I don't know quite what case they're in at the moment. We must have some on display somewhere. Yeah. There used to be a whole lot of them. I think they were mainly Corinthian, the ones we had. I can't see any immediately, but they're probably around somewhere. Okay, there are so many. I'm rather fond of that little amphora. It was obviously a miniature. It may have been meant as an offering. A bit too big to be a child's toy. That's got a sea monster being wrestled. You know, the one with dots around the bottom of the neck. That's one that Brian Sparks got someone to restore for us in Southampton. I found it in a wooden box. I can't remember whether it was one of Percy's cigar boxes. Anyway, it was fragments. And Annie's note on it was that it was the woman who's, can't remember if she gave her name, had bought it, I think, as fragments. Anyway, she'd bought it at a Red Cross jumble sale in 1951, which was about the year that Percy died, wasn't it?
Yes.
And Annie had never got round to having anything done about it. But when Brian looked at it, he said, well, I think the whole thing's there. So we got it put together again.
Mm.
So that is an acquisition.
Yes.
For the museum.
Yes.
It would have been rather nice to have been able to make a great find of my own, but I never did. I say, there is a little piece of attic black glaze. I think it may have a red figure image on it, which one of the Ewers, I don't know if it was Bill, but bought in a shop in Scotland for some very cheap price.
This is the son.
Well, now it might be the son. Yes, Bill is actually short for Neville. If you find the thing about the exhibition I did, you know, the little brochure, at the end I thank Jean and Bill, Jean and William Ewer, for various help and loans. And he told me, well, no, actually it's Neville. I don't know if that's his middle name or his first name. It was Percy Ewer's middle name, of course. And maybe that's how he pronounced it, Bill. Now, I forget whether it was him. It was one of the Ewers. It was a small item they picked up in an antique shop somewhere. It's pretty not unprepossessing. It may even have a rivet in it. But obviously it meant something. It was a personal gift to them. And at one stage I did have, I don't know if you ever saw it, a little exhibition of benefactors.
No.
And gifts. There was a landlord of an inn called the Four Feathers, I forget where it was, but he had found and bought for about sixpence in an antique shop what turned out to be one of those Corinthian Samvita saucers. Annie thought at first they were Boeotian, but they found the workshop in Corinth, and on this he got Annie to tell them about it, because he had a son at Leighton Park. And they were so pleased at being told all about it. He gave it to the museum.
Yes.
What was his name? Fotheringay? Something like that. But there are just so many things. I mean, we've got, among what I call poor man's silver, we've got one little flat dish which is moulded with a scene of chariot race going round. And there should be around somewhere, or maybe Amy's put in the new postcard. The image is just the same, or very similar to, a silver dish in the British Museum. And Donald Bailey, who used to do lamps in the British Museum, told me that it wasn't uncommon for them to make moulds of that kind of thing.
Oh.
And of course, if you, and John Landles knew all about this, I learned this from him, if you fired black glaze in a certain way, because you know the black is the same clay as the red, it's a very thin slip painted over.
Yeah.
And over a certain temperature, the quartz starts to
oxidize.
It melts. Now, if you keep that, seals in that bit of the pot,
yeah.
And when you let the air in again, the bits that are not painted go red. But if you heat it beyond the temperature to get the firm black glaze and make the firm fused skin, almost a kind of glass, I suppose, it will start to break down and go silvery. And sometimes you can actually see little lines and veins in it. If you look at some of our fake silver stuff, like some of the stuff over there, you'll see that that's already happening. You have to bear in mind a lot of their silver was probably pretty black anyway. And Michael Vickers has some theories about that. Well, I don't know about that, but he has some theories.
Can't see any of the silvery ones. Oh, look, you can see it a bit on the rim of that dish. You see, just where the light's catching. And this one here, the food plate at the back, the plain fish plate, you see how it's gone silver on the edge.
Yeah.
And it's thought that this was sometimes quite deliberate to try and get the effect of silver.
Oh, I see, to get it that hot.
Anything else you can think of to ask me?
No.
I could tell you about loads of other pots that I like, and they're my favourites.
I think we'll call it a day then, and then we can come back. Let's stop it now.
Yeah.